In not Star Wars things, you had a really big week at Google Cloud Next, right? How was that?
Yes. So it was attended by 30,000 attendees. It's definitely bigger than I.O. It's in San Francisco. It was spread out to Moscone North, Moscone South, and like two other hotels. So it was basically a showcase for Google Cloud, this enterprise business that Google wants to desperately expand. Sundar Pichai, he read everything off on day one. And then we also got our first public reveal of the new Google Cloud CEO, Thomas Kurian. And he's a former Oracle executive that Google brought in to really supercharge their enterprise business. For our purposes, our leadership, they're interested in like G Suite stuff and this consumer-facing tools that they can expect to use. So I guess the first big one would be Hangouts Chat. As Google confirmed to you earlier in this year, it is coming to Gmail. It'll take the exact same spot as the old classic Hangouts. It's just a panel. You can open one-to-one conversations in small windows that like dock at the bottom of the screen, but Rooms, they open as a full screen experience. So in a way, you do have the full Hangouts chat experience right in Gmail. And I think that's going to do wonders for adoption for this service when it's just right there in Gmail.
So it's not going to be in the sidebar like Google Tasks and Keep and Calendar?
Doesn't look like it. I'm sure Google is still in its early stages in terms of it would make a lot of sense to put Hangouts Chat in that side panel in that, as an add-on, because you could integrate all the other Google Drive chat stuff, the Google Docs, but I guess Google is really taking it slow with in terms of adoption. So during one of the sessions, basically Google wants to bring all its enterprise users first to new Hangouts chat. They start this new accelerated program where you can beta test new features quickly. But the deadline they announced in January, I believe, was by move all users to October. But according to the head of Hangouts chat, looking at adoption right now of where existing enterprise users are, it might be closer to December. So the impression that I got when talking to Google and the PR was that they're not going to shut down classic Hangouts for G Suite users until everybody is transitioned over and everybody's ready. So it's not going to be a hard cut.
That makes a lot of sense. So do we know? I feel like Scott Johnson, the cloud comms lead guy that kind of went on a Twitter tirade talking about chat a few months ago, he kind of, I think tried to convey that chat would kind of be a one-for-one replacement of Hangouts. And do you really see that happening? Or does it seem like this is rather a Slack competitor, which is pretty much what we suspected? Because like, for instance, they announced guest access this week. Is that it's not really the same thing as kind of an open chat service that anyone can use. It's more of like a chat service open for private organizations that allow anyone else in. What's the distinction here between what old Hangouts does and Hangouts chat based on what you saw at Cloud Next this week?
Well, so of course it was Google Chat first, then Hangouts. And actually, the way I kind of disagree with your characterization of openness in Hangouts, even in classic Hangouts, because once they switched over the protocols and shut down Google Chat, there was no longer an open system.
Sure, it's not open in that sense, but I just mean that it's open in the sense that as long as you have a Gmail account, you can send a message to, or at least request to send a message to literally any other Gmail user.
Yeah.
And do you perceive that you'll be able to do the exact same thing in Hangouts Chat?
Absolutely. Okay. They showed it off. They external, so you can communicate with other businesses that use G Suite domain and gmail.com. So yeah, that is coming. So that idea of openness will be there. 1.5 billion Gmail users is pretty open, I guess.
Yeah, it's like a pretty good percentage of the world. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but to your broader point about the idea of Hangouts, the impression of they had a session where they announced like 6 new features coming to Hangouts chat in the coming months and years ahead. When Google was able to present their vision, like in a 30-minute session, and just showed feature after feature that was from legacy Hangouts and even the new features, they were able to do so much better job of presenting their vision about what Hangouts chat is compared to the blog post they did. At the end of last year and the start of this year.
Yeah, following the Hangouts or the Google Allo shutdown, trying to characterize everything that they're offering. Is that what you're comparing it to?
Yeah, it's in a way. Again, this is the problem with Google. Oftentimes, is their lack of clear communication and their lack of presentation skills in terms of getting in conveying what products for people are. And I think that if they did a super dense blog post from the beginning with all these features, even if they weren't ready, and just tell people that this is what's coming, this is what our vision is for Hangouts chat, I think there would have been a much less of an outcry at Google killing another service from the beginning. It really does seem like an evolution, like modernizing. Modernizing Hangouts to Hangouts chat, but yeah, there's what is killing a service. Google is definitely killing Hangouts in regards to they're changing the backend infrastructure kind of thing.
Yeah, and they're also changing Hangouts, I think, chat. From a marketing messaging standpoint. That's really, in my opinion, the biggest change is not actually the functional services that are being offered, but as much as I think it's more so. You know, when Google goes, just like Apple or OnePlus or anyone tries to sell you a phone, what apps are they telling the consumer to use for different use cases? For a yes. long time, the message that Google was conveying about which apps you should use about for messaging, if you are a buyer of a Google Nexus phone or any other Android phone, pretty much was use Hangouts. That's Google's messaging offering. And now that's not really the messaging anymore. The messaging in my opinion, we've talked about this a lot on the show. I think the messaging is more starting to lean toward RCS and messages being the primary messaging platform that Google's pushing to consumers. But Hangouts chat will continue to carry the torch that Hangouts began and being now a far more expanded enterprise offering. Hangouts,
enterprise offering.
Something to note, I think, is that Hangouts was already being heavily used by the enterprise. And I think that there's a lot of people that were consumer, I guess, Hangouts users that didn't realize how heavily Hangouts was used in the enterprise. And so from Google's perspective, it makes a lot of sense. It seems like a natural transition. But from our perspective, we don't use Hangouts for work, especially Googlers. You know, Googlers internally
they use Hangouts.
Use Hangouts for work.
Use it to the dying day.
So yeah, Hangouts was directly associated with work for many, many, many people, and so it's just natural that Hangouts chat continues to carry that on. But obviously now it's going to be far, far expanded, and I think that's the biggest place that this confusion was the distinction between what's enterprise and what's consumer, but. You know, I think the place people were getting hung up was that Hangouts chat is enterprise focused, but it will not be exclusively for the enterprise. It will be open to everyone just as every other G Suite or most other G Suite product is.
And I've said this in a past podcast, but I think obviously our readership would prefer that Hangouts chat be available to consumer at Gmail accounts. All that, but at the same time, I kind of feel that Google would have a much cleaner story, a narrative to tell about Hangouts chat if they just stuck to their guns and kept it a G Suite service. So that would be a complicated distinction to make, but I think that would have been a cleaner scenario.
Hmm.
So
Yeah, but anyways, like you said, it's really good to see that they're doubling down on it, and they're presenting
a vision.
Presenting a more cohesive vision for where they're going, rather than just saying, you know, this is the new Hangouts.
So and to touch on a few more things about Hangouts chat, Google Meet Hangouts Meet integration is coming, in terms that when you're in a room, you can quickly call a person and start a video call. And Google Voice integration is also coming, same way. You can, if you're in a conversation with somebody and G Suite is, and Google Voice is set up for your G Suite, you can call them. I guess the even more exciting stuff is currently Hangouts Chat is available as a Mac and as a Windows app, but Google is transitioning to a progressive web app. So I know some people use that ancient Chrome web app of Hangouts, that tiny box that floated, but there will be a replacement, and this PWA should be a good one.
Mm-hmm.
So just a few other things. Google Assistant can now integrate with your G Suite calendar, which means you can ask your assistant about what calendar events are coming up. Google showed this really cool demo where you're able to, after you get your calendar, let's say you're running late for a meeting, you can say, tell Google to email those people saying, I'll be late, save me a seat, whatever. And Assistant handles all of that in a seamless interaction. And the other major piece of news was Google Plus for Enterprise being rebranded to Google Currents.
Which, yeah, it's the rebirth of an old brand.
An old brand, yeah. It was a magazine app, for those who don't remember. It was quite plain. I think I remember using it once on the Nexus 7. I don't know. It was hollow. That was quite cool. But I think, again, it's for enterprise. Most consumers can't use it. But I think the interesting thing is, like in how Hangouts was used by a lot of work customers, there's a real demand for enterprise to have this like internal Google, to have like this kind of internal forum or like a Facebook group, and Currents meets a demand. So that's another interesting product.
Mm-hmm.
And who knows, maybe they'll open it back up to regular people one day. Super limited format. And lastly, security keys. Every single Android 7.0 phone and above is a security key that you can use for two-factor authentication. This is like my best of show, personally, in terms of this tiny, instead of having to buy like a $20 accessory that you have to physically keep on the keychain with you all the time, you can just use your existing phone to verify your login when you're signing into Google. So far, it only works with Google accounts, but Google is in the process of standardizing this phone-based security key. And this is like an exciting move for security and a technically impressive one.
For me, the best in show, and I think this is kind of a perfect segue into talking about what we're going to talk about next, was there's a session specifically at Google Cloud Next that was about Google's first-party hardware in being used in enterprise business cases, basically. And I think that this is an important piece of news slash, I guess, I don't know, it's just an interesting development, given recent news about, or a recent report from Business Insider that said that Google was, they said that they basically fired half their like tablet slash laptop division, or a sizable chunk, which I think that story got sensationalized and misreported to suggest that Google was pretty much canceling the Pixel Book or the Pixel Slate, or the Pixel Slate was so bad that Google's just no longer going to even try tablets or laptops anymore or anything. And if you've been watching Alphabet Scoop for the last couple of weeks, you know that we kind of already, you know, told you that that's just kind of nonsense. But now we have even, I guess, further confirmation that that interpretation of that report was and is nonsense. And it seems Google is kind of very, very early teasing that there's kind of a new category of,
yeah,
or type of laptop slash tablet device that they're building for business use cases.
Yeah, so I think what the important part that Google had to do with that session was they had to reassure their partners that they're still into hardware, that people who are buying Pixelbooks, and apparently people also buying Pixel Slates, will be happy to know that they're still offering hardware and that they're going to stand by it and make new ones. This is especially important in the context of Chromebook adoption, increasingly in small businesses and even corporate environments. So they had to reassure their partners that they're still making hardware. And that, with that said, Google described what their third possible notebook or tablet hybrid is in the form of. And like you said at the top, they do have a vision for another device. And they were quite vague on it, but I think we can clearly see that they're planning more hardware, and it's targeting productivity on the go. So,
yeah,
that honestly sounds like a tablet, doesn't it?
I think
more of a convertible.
Yeah, it sounds like a convertible type device, kind of along the same vein of the Pixel Slate. I agree with you. I think that's the main purpose of the session, was that I think that there was a little bit of doubt that was stirred up recently with that report, and lots of businesses that are making hundreds of thousands of dollars in investment in Google hardware, I think Google wanted to reassure not only, yes, the Pixelbook and Pixel Slate are going to continue to be available and are going to continue to be supported. That's one line that Google constantly highlights, is that the Pixelbook and Chrome OS devices in general are going to be, one of the better security, better options for businesses with security, because these devices are constantly updated in the background without hardly any effort from the user, which is different than a lot of other, competing laptops and stuff. So, and then I guess this tease of this new product, which was obviously left very vague and very, unspecific, is that, they're also saying, yeah, we're still working on more stuff. They're not really any characterization that Google was canceling their laptop efforts is just bogus.
And at the same time, I would say about these partners, I'm sure if you're buying like 100,000 Chromebook Pixels, Google will definitely tell you what the heck is coming up next.
Yeah.
These major partners, they know what's coming up next. Google will tell them ahead of time. So I'm sure they're the ones with the insight. And that, again, this week's session was at everybody else that was interested.
I thought it was funny that on the Google Hardware for Business website, they say the Pixel Slate starts at $599.
Yeah.
Which, for those who haven't been following, that $599 device doesn't exist at all. So if businesses are looking to buy Pixel Slates, their only option is the M3 model. Unless Google, I don't know. I don't think this is probably true or accurate, but maybe
cash.
Yeah, maybe there's a secret stash of Celeron Pixel Slates sitting in a warehouse somewhere that Google's only selling to businesses, which would not be a good idea, I don't think, because I think that's a really good way to lose a customer. Sell them a Pixel Slate and then sell them a Pixel Slate that's not performing too well. Anyways.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think for me personally, that was the most interesting thing that came out of Cloud Next, because a lot of this enterprise stuff, I mean, we don't use Hangouts Chat for our work yet.
We tried to.
And I think it's currently the 9-to-5 Google backup solution. If Slack goes down, which thankfully Slack has far better reliability than HipChat did. but if Slack goes down, Hangouts Chat's basically our backup. And it seems like it'll become a better and better backup as time goes on. Maybe one day we'll eventually make the switch. As for Currents, Seth asked me, he was like, do you think we should jump on Currents? And I honestly was like, I don't see the benefit of it. I don't really see the much benefit of a internal, I guess, internet social network for most businesses. I think it makes more sense if you're
a big company. Yeah, as
probably makes much more sense for very, very large companies
that don't use like Slack or Hangouts Chat.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, that's Cloud Next. And I guess next up we can talk about the Pixel 3a and Pixel 4, I guess is the part that most people have probably been waiting for. A lot has changed in the last week and a half.
Yeah.
However long it's been since we talked last.
It's
a lot of developments here.
So the first development started on Friday afternoon when Google updated the Google Store with this new header navigation system that revealed the Pixel 3a, the Nest Home, God, these names are horrible, the Nest Hub Max, and the Nest Home Hub, was it? I think that was the third one.
No.
Horrible.
There was the Nest Hub. So the Google, there's Google Home Hub / Google Nest Hub. And then there was
Google Nest Hub
yes, Max.
That's a tree right
there. Yes.
So,
and so there's lots to unpack here.
Yeah.
Let's start with Pixel 3a. We already knew, we exclusively reported that Pixel 3a was going to be a thing. And is a thing, that's the go-to-market name. And this is very, very solid evidence that report was correct. That, apparently there's a Google, probably an intern or someone working on, the Google Store website and accidentally put Pixel 3a, on the list of products available for sale with a little blue menu marker next to it.
Yep.
So if you had any doubt that Pixel 3a was the name of this upcoming mid-range Pixel, that's pretty much solid information at this point. Other than that, there wasn't any new Pixel 3a information outside out of this little leak.
Nope. We learned this can be a fabric case for Pixel 3a. So.
Oh, that's right. That was the other little tidbit, is that there will be, just like the Pixel 3, a Pixel 3a fabric case.
Mm-hmm.
As for the Nest Hub Max,
yeah,
which is, I if you've been watching Alphabet Scoop the last couple of weeks, you know that I was skeptical of this name. It just seems weird for multiple reasons and just bad. But just like Pixel 3a, it seems like, the first leak Android Police spotted a couple weeks ago was a direct reference to Nest Hub Max just sitting there on one Google Store page, and it disappeared 30 minutes later. And it just mentioned that the device had a 10-inch screen, it had a Nest Cam on the front for duo calls. Not many details, but, it seemed like pretty surefire evidence that this product was going to be called Nest Hub Max. And I was doubtful, but I think that seeing it happen two distinct times in two different places on the Google Store website would pretty matter-of-factly confirm that Google has settled on Nest Hub Max as the name for its new 10-inch smart display.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, not only are they naming the Nest Hub Max the Nest Hub Max, it seems like they might be planning a very weird and confusing rebrand of the Google Home Hub already.
Yeah.
Which is bizarre. What do you think about it?
The successful Google Home Hub, mind you, it's...
Partly successful because they're giving them out like candy, like they did the Home Mini.
That's true. Discounts. Oh, cool. So I guess my theory was that maybe Nest, since Google was bringing it into the name, Google Nest Hub, right next to each other, which is interesting, is that maybe Nest is used to distinguish products with a display. So any future things with a screen, which can be, I'll get to the security aspect a bit later, but anything with a screen earns the Nest name. It makes sense in that Google Home is just for audio products and speakers. It makes a clear distinction right there. And for Google, it's a better name than a smart display, don't you think? It's smart display is a generic name that everybody can use, but Google can just call it the Google Nest products with displays.
Yeah. And that maybe. My counter theory is that I think that the Nest brand is more closely associated with cameras than it is with displays.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the Nest thermostat is where Nest got its claim to fame, and I think that's its primary association. But secondarily, the Nest Cam has been a pretty big deal ever since Google
bought
Dropcam back in the day. Back in the day, like a few years ago. So yeah, to me, I think that the Nest Cam or the Nest name might be both, or it might. To me, I more think of the camera when I think of Nest.
So my addendum.
So
my second part of what NAS could mean is security, and that in a way that an audio-only device can't provide security words to you, something with display can. Even the Google Home Hub and this Google Nest Hub can provide security alerts, can show you a live camera feed, like you were saying. It has access to home view to arm and disarm your alarm. So I think that is this. That would be my second part of why it's being called Nest and why.
And my second connection would be that if it has a camera on the front, and if Google's use case for this camera is, this makes sense to put on an entryway table, mm-hmm. or in your living room. I've seen a lot of people put Nest cams like on their, I guess, TV, yep. entertainment center or whatever. And I think just putting a home hub, a 10-inch home hub on an entertainment center or an entryway with a camera on it. And I would assume that it seems like, you know, as of right now, the way Google offers access to those cameras and to those security feeds is via the Nest app. Mm-hmm. And so that's to me, the camera connection there is that you would access your feed or you'd access the security footage via the Nest app, and therefore it's connected to that brand that way. Either way, I don't know. It's interesting. It's like the home view, like you're describing, also has, it's not really Nest branded. It's, you know, it just lets you tap into your Nest cam. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, you would think that maybe Google would add the ability to access your security cam footage via to the main Google Home app, which as of right now...
That's not. But we have seen signs that Google is working on bringing Nest setup, device pairing, setting up your cameras, setting up the Nest Secure door alarms and all that kind of stuff right into the Google Home app. This is a long time synergy integration that has been missing since Google bought it. But now that everything's under one house, maybe we can start to see all those features right there.
Yeah, it's just a difficult branding problem. I honestly I'm very quick to say that this is a terrible name for the product, but I have to admit that this is a really difficult problem that Google's facing. They have a really strong brand with Nest, and now that you know Nest is back under the Google umbrella and not a standalone Alphabet company, and Google's really trying to integrate it closely with the rest of their products.
Yeah,
they have to define what is Nest and what isn't Nest, because that line is getting very blurred, I think. I mean, I think the Google Home Hub was a really good example of that. It was with Home View, it definitely tied in closely with your Nest thermostat and your Nest cameras and everything else. And so, yeah, it's blurry what is Nest and what isn't Nest. And I think it seems like they've made a decision sometime between last October when they launched the Home Hub and now. They've made a decision that either a device having a display or a device having a camera or both is what makes it a Nest product.
Yeah.
And it seems like that's what will define Nest branded products going forward. Whereas speakers, it seems, will maintain the home brand.
Mm. I do want to touch on something you pointed out earlier. Google Nest, those names being next to side by side. Yeah. It's
very odd.
In a funny way, that it could be called Google Nest Hub because both companies created it. It's like a very technical reason for why they would name it that. Like in the way that the Nest Hub Max has a clearer lineage by including a camera, Google would be putting Google Nest Hub.
Well, one thing I was thinking about is what if Google has decided that they want to keep the Nest brand around, but they want to use it as an adjective rather than a noun? So, you know, there have been plenty of Nest products that have existed over the last few years, but it's always been a noun. This is a Nest thermostat, as in a Google Home. You know, it's describing the brand name. Whereas I feel like they could easily take the Nest brand and use it as an adjective to describe any product that has security or smart home, I guess, security features in some way, one way or another. In which case, that, you know, it's like they could just add Nest to anything.
A Nest front-facing camera on your Pixel.
But then, exactly. You could have a Nest cam on your Pixel, a Google Nest Pixel. I don't know. But Yeah, I think
Google Pixel at Nest.
The thing though is like, what defines Nest? Nest, the imagery just makes you. I mean, the whole point of the Nest brand in the first place was just to be smart home, right? Like, yeah. It was supposed to be generic enough to reflect anything that was
your Nest
connected home devices. Yeah, your Nest. And in that sense, the standard Google Home is also a Nest product. You know, if that's your definition of Nest, then every smart home product that Google offers has to be Nest as well. So you have to say, what does this Nest adjective mean? Does it mean security? Does it mean connected home, all connected home products except the Google Home speaker, which is tend to be used for music and other entertainment purposes, entertainment and information purposes rather than managing the home? Is that what adjective means? Is that what the Nest adjective means? Does it mean management of the home, aka management of your thermostat, management of security, management of, you know, whereas if you define Nest as management of the home, then the standard Google Home is not exactly in that category, although it does control, it does tie, everything ties in. So it's hard to draw these lines. And I guess what I'm saying, connecting back to what I said, is I have sympathy for the marketing teams and the branding teams, because I'm quick to say that this is a terrible brand name, but I don't have any better answers into how to continue using the Nest brand without it being pretty confusing.
Let me throw out another way Nest could describe. How about smart? As in like, obviously the cat, that Nest Cam would be doing image recognition, identifying who's coming in, who back and forth, and in terms of how the Home Hub is smart, how because display does that ambient EQ, ambient display writing thing. I don't know. To me, it really does tie back to the idea of a screen. Nest as a screen, as a display.
Well, that's not. I mean. Well, I guess the problem with that for me is that Nest Cam is the second most popular association with the Nest.
Yeah, but
brand.
It's explicitly
Nest,
tied.
Nest Cams
to
don't have displays.
But you explicitly view the streams on display.
Sure. Hmm. Anyways, I think we've gotten a little bit into the weeds a little bit. But yeah, so Nest Hub Max. This is apparently a thing, and the interesting thing is that, going back a couple months, Kyle discovered a device prototype codenamed Sherlock in the Fuchsia source code, which shared a lot of hardware similarities, specifically the chip that it runs on and the display resolution, or I guess ratio, or I guess
resolution.
Yeah, resolution. With the standard Google Home Hub. So we posted a couple months ago, it looked like, you know, there was some Google Home Hub Max in the works, which we now know, I think, we can't say this for certain yet, but it seems like this hardware may be what Google will be launching as the Nest Hub Max. Mm-hmm. And given everything that Kyle was able to dig up in Fuchsia, we actually have a decent spec sheet on what the Nest Hub Max actually is, which would be, for those curious, a 10.1-inch display, LCD, 1280 by 800 resolution display, which is
HD.
About the same. It's just a scaled up version of the standard Google Home Hub, and it's 150 pixels per inch, an Amlogic T931 system on a chip with 2 gigs of RAM. That Nest camera on the front is a 12 megapixel Sony IMX277, which I think he made a connection to that. Oh, yes, it's on the GoPro Hero 7 Black. So it's a pretty good camera sensor. And it has seemingly stereo speakers, which I think the standard Google Home Hub is just a mono speaker.
Yes, mono speaker.
So yeah, it's definitely an upgrade. It's just sounds like a larger version of the Google Home Hub. But what's interesting to think about though is, how is Google going to change the interface? If this is a Nest product, does having that Nest adjective in the brand name, does that change anything about the interface and the software and the UI? Or is it just going to be a larger Google Home Hub and Google's rather going to just slap the Nest name on the Home Hub, which that seems like the most likely scenario of the two.
Yeah.
So anyways, interesting. We'll see what story Google tells with this whole Nest thing. My guess is that it's going to start being used as an adjective to describe some aspect of these products. We'll see. Okay. Another interesting thing is that it seems this will be launching at some point very, very, very soon.
Yeah.
Because I guess this is the connection, is that with Pixel 3a, the leak we saw on the Play Store, which was also last Friday, just before Google leaked it on the Google Store, there were strings on the Play Store for these devices that said mid-year experience, which suggested that the Pixel 3a would be coming sometime mid-year. And if the Pixel 3a is coming sometime mid-year, which I'll have a little bit of more information on that here in a moment, and we make the connection to the Nest Hub Max via the fact that it launched or it leaked on the Google Store side by side with Pixel 3a, that would seem to suggest that Google's preparing to update the Google Store at the same time for both of these products, which would suggest that the Nest Hub Max is coming at the same time or around the same time as the Pixel 3a, which would mean the Nest Hub Max seems to be coming sometime before Google's annual fall event, where presumably the Pixel 4 and 4 XL will be announced. Now, this is where I will share the first little tidbit that I saved for this show. I came across two different little, I guess, pieces of documentation this week from sources that I trust. And the first piece is that it seems like the Pixel 3a, based on documentation that I've seen, will be launching in early May. I'm not sure when it'll be announced, but I will say that based on evidence that I've seen with my own two eyes, I think my strong, very, very strong suspicion is that the Pixel 3a will be available on the Google Store the morning of the Google I/O keynote. Now, will it be announced on stage at the keynote? To me, that seems weird and unlikely, considering this is a variant of an existing product. If it is mentioned on stage, it seems to me that it would be kind of mentioned on the side, because I don't think that they're going to make fanfare about this product on stage at a developers conference. They've kind of moved away from talking about hardware at Google I/O for the last few years. Do I think that there's going to be some kind of press hands-on set like place at Google I/O? To me, it seems unlikely. I think there's going to be lots of stuff going on software-wise, and I guess, yeah, software-wise mostly. Google I/O is already a crazy busy day. I'm assuming the Beta 3 for Android Q will launch. Lots of stuff going on. To me, my educated guess is that we'll probably see Google do press briefings about this device, as well as the Nest Hub Max, the week before or the week of I/O, and it will be announced online via some kind of press release or embargoed announcement that is given to certain outlets. That's my guess as of right now. I think a lot of people would be quick to assume that Pixel 3a would get the spotlight at Google I/O's stage, but I just don't think that lines up with the way Google's treated I/O the last few years. It would be a weird backtrack to 2015 or 2014 if they did that. Not saying it won't happen, but it seems unlikely to me. I also don't think that Google would give Pixel 3a and the Nest Hub Max their own weird session at I/O either. Just doesn't seem likely. So I think we will see them announced that week. My guess, based on documentation I've seen, is that the Pixel 3a will be available on the Google Store on the morning of May 7th. Could be announced before then, and Google I/O keynote day could be the It's Available Now day. I see that as just as a potentially likely scenario. But yeah, that's the information I have on Pixel 3a launch timeframe. Not all too surprising, and it seems, regardless, all the evidence points to an announcement slash launch soon.
Yes. So, when it rains, it pours. So this is all the timing-wise, it matches up. And I agree with you on the Pixel 3a not deserving stage time, but I think Google needs to explain itself at Nest in a very clear, explicit, and preferably public way of why they're rebranding things.
Yeah, I do think that they need to explain the whole Nest thing, but these two products, if Google is going to launch products outside of its annual release cycle, meaning, you know, outside of its October event that it's had for the last 3 years, These two products seem like the products that would be announced kind of via a embargoed press release type situation, and maybe drum up a little bit of hype around I/O, but it doesn't seem like either of these products are worthy of their own event, given that the Nest Hub Max is literally a larger home hub with a camera. That's literally all it is. So we know the story of the home hub. Google told the story in October. We don't need to hear the story again. It's just a larger, it's the home hub XL. Mm. The Nest part of it, yes, I do think needs a little bit of explanation. I don't think that's necessarily a stage time at I/O explanation. On the Pixel 3a, I think it's a similar story. It's we know the Pixel 3 story. Google told the Pixel 3 story. This is a cheaper version of the Pixel 3 that will be likely sold on Verizon and via the Google Store, apparently, as well, according to, or if that leak is to be trusted, which I think it is. And I don't think there's much story to tell. I mean, it's going to launch with, I think, I don't know. We'll see. I think it'll launch with Pi, and it'll have, you know, a Snapdragon 670, and, you know, like, let's just tone down specs wise, and no glass back, no wireless charging. But other than that, it is a Pixel 3. The larger model admittedly doesn't have a notch, which I guess is the most significant difference. I guess besides the pricing / spec downgrade. We don't know the pricing, still things we don't know about it, but it seems minor to me, and it seems like not really a Google I/O primetime announcement. I think Google will spend way more time talking about assistant developments, mm-hmm, and changes that are coming in Android Q and what developers need to do to, you know, update their apps to be in compliance, and a lot of different things we've gotten used to seeing at Google I/O. Google also takes I/O, I think, to announce features and developments on its other kind of flagship software services, like Google Photos is also tends to get high. It was announced at I/O a few years ago. Mm-hmm. Last year was a big deal. So anyways, I just don't think that these hardware products will get too much attention at I/O. One more thing, though. I mentioned just now that the Pixel 3a will be launching on Verizon. All the evidence points toward that. And at launch, it seems to be that is the case. However, my second little tidbit of information that I am sharing on today's show is that I've heard that in one way or another, whether it be the Pixel 3, the Pixel 3 XL, the Pixel 3a, Pixel 3a XL, or even the Pixel 4 and Pixel 4 XL later this year, T-Mobile, it seems, will be, based on evidence I've seen with my own two eyes, will be carrying some Google Pixel devices at some point in the coming months. Does that mean I think that the Pixel 3a and 3a XL will launch on T-Mobile? I don't think so, because I think that the places we've seen evidence that it's launching on Verizon, we would have also seen evidence that it's launching on T-Mobile if that were already in the works. Also, this information that I've gathered seems pretty early. So to me, if I were to make a guess right now, based on the information I've seen, I think that T-Mobile will be carrying the Pixel 3 and 3 XL and potentially the Pixel 4 and 4 XL later this year. So yeah, that's my little tidbit on that. It seems like Verizon's exclusivity is up on Pixel devices based on information I've seen. And maybe other carriers too will get them. Maybe Google does the full court press this year and does AT&T and Sprint and T-Mobile and Verizon goes all the way. But I've only seen evidence for T-Mobile. So, and also, I guess there's also the possibility, Abner, you mentioned this, that Verizon will maintain exclusivity for the flagship models, mm-hmm, and we'll see non-flagship models come to other carriers other than Verizon this year. We'll see. I don't know. Any thoughts on that?
So it's that this Verizon deal has been good for Google. Well, it's been good for Google in regards to it's a lot of branding Verizon heavily pushes. But of course, having more access is something that Google needs to work on. One out of four carriers, even if it's the biggest in the country, they could benefit from putting it on T-Mobile, especially if it, I don't know, merges with AT&T in the near future. So two out of three carriers in the future would be a very significant move to get their devices out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. So that's what we got on Pixel 3/3a/4. I guess we can touch a little bit more on 4 though, because there were some 4 developments this week. And it's very, very, very early, and I'm just really excited because it's finally the beginning of Pixel 4 leak season, I think.
Indeed.
The first leak. Sorry, go ahead.
So we spotted code names, Kyle, Bradshaw, and Dylan. So spotted first in ASOP, in AOSP, we saw the fact that the code names Coral and Needlefish. And when we checked the Google app, we saw the names Coral and Frame. So, as you noted, Frame is an actual fish. What is it? Frame Angelfish?
Flame Angelfish,
so
yes.
That is how Google will abide by their fishy naming scheme for codenames. But yeah, we saw these codenames. Usually, I think with the Pixel 3 or Pixel 2, we saw the codenames immediately after the previous event announcement or something like that. But this year, it's been later.
One thing I wanted to note on the angelfish thing that I forgot to mention was that do you remember the LG Watch Style and LG Watch Sport?
Yes.
So one of those was actually called Angelfish. Well, the code name was Angelfish. So this, and it's just interesting to note that this would be the second, if Google's going with the Flame Angelfish, this would be the second angelfish. Sorry, I just wanted to mention that.
It's the tidbits, but yeah. So again, like we saw for Google Coral, we months earlier, I think in January, we spotted a benchmark that noted specs like 6 gigs of RAM was the most notable. And at the time, we thought that Coral was just a placeholder for something else. But in retrospect, this looks to be a benchmark of the Pixel 4.
Yeah, and I mean, these are pretty much, if it is a Snapdragon 855 and 6 gigs of RAM, I mean, that's like the two biggest specs that could possibly leak, and it is not even May yet. So it looks like for the first time this year so far, for the Pixel 4 leak cycle, we have solid information on what the specs look like. And it's not super solid, but more solid than anything we've seen so far. Snapdragon 855, 6 gigs of RAM, 4 gigs of RAM last year was kind of one of the biggest complaints with the Pixel 3 and 3 XL. I think Google maybe bottlenecked themselves a little bit and maybe underestimated how difficult it would be to optimize the software for that amount of RAM. Seems like that's being resolved this year with 6 gigs. A lot of people are crying for 8 gigs, but I'm of the opinion that we should be conservative with it.
Yeah. You can do a lot of it software most of the time.
Yep. So that's Pixel 4 and Pixel 4 XL. I'm sure we'll have more on those devices in the coming weeks. It seems probably pretty much every week or every other week for the next 6 months we'll have a new bit of information about the Pixel 4 and Pixel 4 XL. I'm trying to call all my Foxconn people and trying to get images of screen protectors.
Yeah, and
man, that was a crazy leak last year, because what those screen protectors told us was more than that. Those screen protectors told us way more than the average screen protector leak would tell you.
Yeah.
Because the notch was so unique and so big last year, and that first screen protector leak showed that off.
Yeah, and that hidden screen protector that may or may not exist underneath
the Google Pixel Ultra. Yeah. And who knows, maybe it was actually a Pixel 3a XL screen protector.
All comes around. Yeah.
Everything has a rational explanation.
Most of the time.
Anyways, I guess that pretty much rounds up our hardware talk for the week. Was there any more notable stories you wanted to chat about before we close out the show?
So, our Divan was able to enable this material theme for the Google Play Store, which is, I don't know, I/O seems like a good time to show it. It's modern. It updates everything accordingly. The Play Store has always seemed like a mismatch of old all the design stylings to me. So be sure to look at that gallery there, because it's quite in depth, quite in detail of everything that's coming to the Play Store.
Yeah, and it looks nice, I think. It's like the last app to finally get updated with this all white look.
Everything, they're almost finished. And it's been a year. Yeah. This is a pretty good track record for Google, getting their first party apps all there.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Matias Duarte said last year, he said that it would be a slow rollout and that we'd see the Google Material theme appear in all of Google's, like everything across Google, basically in order from least important to most important. So Gmail took a really long time. Play Store is obviously really important for Google, and so they wanted to make sure they got it right, just like Gmail and other apps. So yeah, looks nice. What else is there left? Are there any big notable ones that are still... lagging behind on Material theme? Can't remember off the top of my head.
Chrome has it. YouTube, but that's a whole another division, so I don't know how they're doing that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's its own brand, I think.
Yeah, and they have their own thing going, and they need to keep a consistent design across smart TV apps and whatnot. So that might be a long time coming. No, that's Maps has it pretty early. All the Google Play apps now have it. So yeah, good job Google on rolling stuff out.
Indeed. Yeah, a lot of people were really mad this week about, speaking of YouTube, the YouTube TV price hike.
Yeah, I don't know what I'm doing with that.
The second hike. So it was 35 and then 40 and now 50, right?
Yeah, it's... $10 is a lot, and what people are mad at is not being grandfathered into $35, which is right.
Yeah, because all the $35 people were grandfathered into 40, right?
Yeah,
and now they're going to get bumped up from 35 to 50.
Yeah, 35 is a very good deal.
Or canceled. Yeah. So, yeah, and 35 to 50 is a big difference, I think, for some people when they're adding up everything that they subscribe to. Man, the whole like subscription service thing is about to turn into a mess, because for the last 5 years, as long as you had Netflix and maybe Hulu, you know, those are pretty much the mainstays. And it's about to become really complicated because...
Yes and no, and that Disney looks like they've won this.
They've won, but there's going to be countless things that are on Netflix that aren't on, you know, it's like,
yeah,
I think Disney Plus is I mean, $5.99 or
$6.99
five something if you buy the year,
yeah,
the year
69 year for price. Year,
yeah, so it's like, I mean, that's a crazy good price, but it's like, it's kind of like the same thing that Netflix did, is they've raised their price a few times since launch. Yeah. I think they were originally seven a month.
And I believe that
for just streaming,
Disney is expected to lose $3 billion on Disney Plus in the first year and $5 billion in the second year. They're not going to make money on this for a while with the content commitments they're all doing.
Yeah, I think that they'll slowly do price creep just like Netflix did. Within 5 years, it'll be up to 13 or 14 or something.
I can't wait for the XDA comic. You know that XDA comic? Not XKCD? I forgot the name.
XKCD.
XKCD comic about how standards, we need a new standard. And at the end of it, you have your 15th standard. I feel like we're all coming around to unbundling, and... you're starting to make like cable television a good deal at $100, but you have to subscribe so many per month.
For sure. Yeah. But YouTube TV is pretty good. I mean, even at 50, YouTube TV is not bad.
Yeah, it's not bad,
I don't think. But 35 was definitely a no-brainer, in my opinion.
Oh, the one thing I've thought, YouTube has the best player interface from like a very basic standpoint. It's solid, it's reliable, it lets you scrub as long as things are already loaded. And I just wish that every single service out there would just adopt the YouTube player, because it is the best, arguably.
What I think YouTube TV should have done is they should have kept the $35 tier and added a $50 tier. And so...
Yeah, tiers. Yeah, that's not bad.
I mean, because what they did recently, I mean, they tried to sell this $15 price hike by adding Discovery, HGTV, Food Network, TLC. They're doing the same thing that the cable companies did.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same story. It's like the whole point of YouTube TV was like, oh, great, I can get all these channels. I don't have to pay for all the bloat that comes with a cable subscription, and I can pay $35 a month. And now it's like, and now it's getting bloated to the point where if I pay $50 a month for YouTube TV, I'm not gonna watch.
I watch like five 90% channels. Of it. I watch five channels, and that's it. I never touch it.
Yeah. So you're paying $10 a month per channel at the new subscription price.
Yeah, it's not Discovery. I guess people like Discovery Channel.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's TV.
I guess the thing though is they've got to make money on it, which they haven't yet. So.
Yeah, a million subscribers. A million subscribers, plus or minus how many they end up losing, times $50 a month is a pretty penny. Well, plus the contracts that they signed. So, YouTube.
Okay. Anyways, I think that talking about Disney Plus and the fact that they're going to have Star Wars, all nine Star Wars movies on it, and Star Wars shows is a pretty good...
Star Wars shows. Kappa.
It's a pretty good way to end the show the same way we started it.
Yes.
So hopefully we'll see more Pixel 3A, Pixel 4, and Nest Hub Max leaks in the coming weeks before I/O. We're very excited. I/O is coming up in just a few weeks. We'll be on the ground like May, I don't know, 5th or 6th through like the 9th. So we're going to be there for quite a while. Yeah, looking forward to it. Until next week, you can tune into Alphabet Scoop here every week. We record this podcast every Wednesday and publish every Thursday morning, except times like this when we're recording on a Friday afternoon because Abner was at Google Cloud Next. And you can find us on all your favorite podcasting platforms such as iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts, Google Play, and you can also listen over at 95google.com. Thanks for tuning in as always, and thanks to Abner for joining me. We'll see you next week.
Bye.